Join us as we chat in a bella mood about music, philosophy, psychology, and anything else that will come to mind. Enjoy.
Our thoughts tonight. Welcome back.
We're back.
Ashok is here and Sean is here.
Hello.
So today we're talking about, what are we talking about, Ashok?
Mythology, again. This is going to be our, I suppose, part two, or better yet, extension of part one, or our previous episode about mythology. Previous episode, I think, was around 2.5 hours. I think we're going to try to push the 4 hour, 5 hour mark, maybe.
Let's hit it.
Whereas previously we talked about mostly the concepts of mythology as well as our little game, I think we're going to talk about, I think, expand a little bit more about the concept and maybe get into the contents as well. But we'll see what happens. Before we get into anything, as always,
Crucem
Sanctum.
Crucem Sanctum.
That was Crucem Sanctum, as always.
Crucem Sanctum subit.
Yep. So today, we're back with part two, as we mentioned earlier, part two of the mythology podcast, or mythology episode of the podcast on Our Thoughts Tonight. I'll let you guys kind of take it away again, because I am not the most savvy when it comes to mythology.
Well, I mean, come on. I mean, like, so did you ever get interested in, like for example, Greek mythology is like the most classic thing, right?
Yeah,
so
of
it's
course.
Like, I don't know. I feel like I kind of want to touch a little bit on the effects of, like, those old school mythology. I mean, I don't want to get too conceptual, but, like, the effects of those old school mythologies in our modern day too, a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the thing that came into my mind a little bit was, for some reason, the whole, I think it was, like, with Nietzsche, the whole Dionysian stuff, where, like, we still reference those old school mythologies in reference to whatever thing we're talking about, whether it be philosophy or some other thing. Even as simple things as, like, we still use our weekdays based off Norse gods or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just think that's really...
My question there would be, how many people today are aware of that, though?
Well, that's the thing. I don't think they would be aware of it, but it's so ingrained in it that they're not aware as well, maybe.
Yeah, I would say maybe 50 years ago, yeah, that more people were in tune with mythology. Particularly anybody who studied literature or psychology would, because all the allusions from many of the early poets to mythology, whether the poets themselves believed in that mythology or not, mostly from the classical mythologies, and also, say, Freud and Jung and their work. And speaking of the Christian mythology, I would say 50 years ago and before, many more people on the street would have recognized most allusions to the Bible,
Yeah. Which
is not true today. There were people who could recite chapter and verse almost ad infinitum. Right, but that's not true anymore. And an allusion to any classical myth or even the Bible or the Quran, I think, goes over many people. Never mind other holy books, but I think it goes over most people's heads.
Well, of course, yeah, definitely.
Well, that's the whole thing with, I mean, I don't want to use it's not really modernization, but the modern pathway we follow at these days. Like, it is becoming less spiritual and less religious. So I guess a side effect of that is overall less common awareness of those things, or of the things that were so given in the past, you know, like the verses that everyone might know. Like, for example, what's that Bible verse that everyone still, like, they always say, like, what was it, John 3:16, right? Like, I see that everywhere still, but no one really says the verse. I mean, maybe it's just, you know, from my own perspective, I don't really know too much. I don't even know the verse, but it's like, all I see is John 3:16. I never see it actually written out as well. You know, it's always John 3:16. What is it? I don't know. Like, you know, John 3:16. I think it's about love or something, but you know, I'll bet that a lot of people who wear shirts like that or say stuff like that,
right.
It's more of a symbol than anything else.
Definitely.
You know? But yeah, I feel, yeah. So I don't know. It's kind of weird.
So do you think then that many people today, even though they're not aware of most mythologies and maybe even don't know extensively the own mythology which they might believe, although there are a lot of people who know the Bible very well.
Yeah.
Do you think it's myths still affect us, thinking here in terms of, I'm being old school here, but thinking in terms of, say, Freud and Jung?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, I suppose the skeleton of that question is really just...
do they affect us even though we don't know it?
Yeah, Freud or Jung, really. That's another way I'm seeing it. That question is like, I suppose by the myths, I'm more thinking of the Jungian archetypes in that scenario. And if that stuff still affects us, my whole thing with the—I mean, it's not. I think archetypes I would maybe categorize that as a subsection of the concept of mythology, but I don't really. It's not the entirety of what that is, but like, at the end of the day, if those same structures, if those same mythological and archetypical structures were made by whatever human interaction, I think it's better to, instead of saying. I'm not sure if I totally believe this, but I think the better perspective is at the end of the day, there's still the same thing, but not that those things affect us, but the same mechanisms that sprouted those things. At the end of the day, if those mechanisms of, you know, let's just go to an archetype, you know, if the Joker or not Joker, the wise man archetype, right? If that came about as a, you know, from the common notion of elders knowing things, right? Then yes, that archetype, that idea, that story idea, or that figure still affects us because it's obviously still a thing, right? So, I guess the answer is yes. I don't think it's as profound, I suppose.
We're not aware of it.
We're not either. Yeah, either way you take it, we're not aware of it. I agree.
I think we are still very much affected by myth, even though many of us aren't aware of it. Let's take like. Popular films, Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, which I read the book long before I saw the movies.
Yeah.
But those are based on archetypes, light versus dark.
Yeah.
The hero goes on a journey.
That's
the talisman.
The thing is, like those things, I mean, this take the idea of like the creation of those archetypes in the first place. So like the hero, right? The hero's journey, Campbell, stuff like that, right? So... I mean, just going off like a natural evolutionary basis or even just historical basis, that could, I mean, this is just a shot in the dark with guesses, but like, you know, take a simple man in whatever time period, Bronze Age, pre-Bronze Age, Stone Age areas, or, you know, caveman times, whatever, like, you would suspect that a person who goes out, sacrifices themselves for something, and gets something for the community would be a very positive figure within that society. So... And I think that still affects those things. Still, those people still exist today. So,
well, you're assuming that they go out on that journey to sacrifice themselves. Yeah. I would suggest another possibility, going back to the hunter-gatherer, that the person who goes off and searches on behalf of the tribe, clan, hunter-gatherer group, maybe they're in search of good grounds. Maybe they're in search of water. Some of them are tired. One person goes off. He's gone for a number of days, comes back, and has discovered a new water source.
Yeah, I mean, either way, it's still the idea of that hero, right? I mean, again, for example, I'm trying to think of like modern examples of like community-based heroes. I can't think of any, but like I suppose in a certain sense, like Frodo from Lord of the Rings is kind of a community-based hero because what he does is for the whole of Middle Earth to save it, right? Or maybe another character might be more revenge-based, which in historically speaking might be a character that's like. I don't know, like tribal conflict or something like that. You know, revenge on the tribe that killed one of your members of your community. But either way, it's still that hero archetype, right? And
well, think of like certain Clint Eastwood films where the hero, not always classically heroic, but he arrives someplace. The stranger arrives someplace, yeah. And there's a classical archetype as well.
Yeah.
And that stranger, therefore, is on a journey.
Yeah, I think that the whole thing is that these I just don't like viewing them as archetypes, because I think, like, even without that label, these, at the end of the day, it's just like how human society has developed. And I think it's just a, I think it's still important to like specify and title those things, like, you know, the hero or whatever, like these people who have developed from these events, which are so common in human society. But I mean, I just don't want to put a mystical touch into that, as Jung sometimes would, you know.
I agree with that.
I don't like that aspect of it, but I get it. Like, those things still affect us, those archetypes. I just don't like looking at them in that perspective. But yeah, they still affect us.
I think that that cheapens it in my eyes. The fact that, you know, Jung saw it as some sort of almost a religious thing. I think that loses, it makes it lose its value. I mean, if you want to talk about, like, these are stories that have been brought down, it makes more sense because it's more material. But I guess to some people it means more when it does have that religious background.
Well, if you go back far enough, it's hard to separate culture from religion.
That's true.
Well, I think that's
where those stories evolve. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Jung seems to have separated the culture from the religion, or maybe I worded that wrong, but somewhere a disconnect came about.
Mm-hmm. It seems like, well, I think originally, and the way I see it, they were not connected. Because the thing is, if those things with the religious connotation has basis in however, you know, like the material basis for like a hero, or, you know, whatever, like the guy going out to for his community, if those religious aspects have basis in non-religious, non-spiritual things, and then at that point, it's a whole, the whole question is the origins of religion. That's where it comes up. Because, like, if those same bases have, if they're material in nature and we connected them through history, right now we have disconnected them, right? And, but the thing is, they've been connected for so long. Even if they weren't connected, like, at the dawn of these stories, now they've been connected for so long. Like, how can we effectively disconnect them if that's our goal?
Why should that be our goal?
Well, yeah, it's a whole, yeah.
But I think that if you go back many centuries, even many millenniums, what you have is a culture determined by its beliefs. And those beliefs tie that community, tribe, polis together. For instance, why did Athens put Socrates on trial? And they wanted to put Aristotle on trial, but he left town. But they put Socrates on trial because of impiety, because he preached against the gods. And it's the gods that tied the city together. And if you think in terms of many cities, they're tied to an individual deity. Athens, for instance, Athena, right? Many of them are founded by gods, or the founding is directed by gods, like Rome. And also Peking is another one. Yeah. Also founded at the bequest of the gods. And so it's really hard to separate mythology from culture. And even today, we talk about ourselves, the United States, even though we're far from it, as a Christian nation. Yeah. And that's mythology entering culture, intertwining with culture.
I mean, I don't know. For example, another example that I thought of was also with like Japan, and I did want to bring this into the conversation a little bit with the belief of in the Shinto, where the actual islands were created by the gods, Izanami and Izanagi. I think it, like, by them procreating or something like that.
The emperor's a god.
Huh? The emperor's a god, little descendant. I think, yeah, from them. But the thing where I'm thinking about is at the end of the day, so let's take into account, let's say, Egyptian mythology, right? So you have the Nile, right? Supplying the people with food or whatever, right? And then from this, there is a religious, over time, a religious mythological birth based around this idea of this nurturing river, right? So that's where you get ideas with the Ra going down the boat with the sun and the moon, you know, all that stuff, right? Well, not the moon, but, and it's based around that. And the whole question of, should we have the goal to separate culture and religion? I feel like that's one of the biggest, that's probably the topic of this entire podcast. Because the thing is, there is absolutely the reality of like the detriments of that. For example, the whole religion was based off a very flourishing and you know, helpful river. And it turned into a very, you know, cult-like Egyptian hierarchy, right? The priests, the whatever, the idea of the pharaoh, these godlike kings, right? Their entire basis, not entire, but, you know, that's also just a straight-up power, but a large part of their basis came from that religious background. But if you dig far enough with those beliefs, at the end of the day, they're nothing more than based off the nature around them. And I know we have some theories about that with nature and stuff and religion. So the idea of should we have that goal to celebrate culture and religion, if we want to answer that question, I suppose a better question might be, can we have culture without that religion and those beliefs? Because mm-hmm. I'm inclined, maybe. I mean, as long as you have, you need history for that culture. You need history, but as long as you don't turn history into some sort of mythological or, religious idea, like with the United States or Soviet Union or something like that.
Well, when you say myth, you seem to be using it in that way, in that last statement, derogatorily.
In a certain sense,
as a falsehood.
Not really falsehood, but emotionally driven, which has its merit, but I'm not going to say it doesn't have its detriment. It's overall a neutral thing. I mean, in that sense, it was bad because it's absolutely capable of having those consequences.
But don't you think that most people are driven by their emotions?
Well, they are. So I think they are, and that's also the little caveat is it possible to even separate the two? And that goes into entire questions like futility and shit. But, mm-hmm. But I mean, I think we can still have a judgment about whether it's good or not, or whether it's useful or not, and say, well, it's impossible to even do it.
Well, it may be. Well, we can look at it a couple ways, I think. One is that we can look at it perhaps detrimentally in that it makes a culture exclusive.
Yeah.
And therefore keeps all of the cultures out. Probably the best example of this in the East, the West ancient world is the Hebrews.
Yeah. Yeah.
And their monotheism. They excluded all other gods. At one point, they actually believed in other gods, but they believed their God was the greatest. If you read the Old Bible or the Old Testament carefully, you realize that the Hebrews actually understood or believed there were other gods, like Baal.
Even the idea of the word Elohim can be plural as well, you know?
Right. But it was their God that was the most important. And eventually their God became the only God. And that made them an exclusive people. But that's not necessarily bad because it also tied them together and allowed them, if, of course, the historicity of the fleeing from Egypt is largely misunderstood or largely misconstrued. It might have just been one tribe as opposed to all 12 tribes. But that single energy that led them to found Israel. And also, if you take Egypt as an example, yes, the river was the source of their religious thinking, probably. We can't say for certain, but probably because they depended so much on it, they turned it into a god, as most prehistoric people did. They turned the natural powers into gods. Agni, for instance, the god of I think thunder and lightning in ancient Hindu, not Hindu, but pre-Hindu mythology, right? And therefore, the priest is not necessarily detrimental or not. At one point, yeah, the priest has to look out for themselves and they become sometimes very self-serving. But the priest was looked upon as a mediator between the common human and the gods above. And therefore, you needed them to beseech the gods to make sure the Nile flooded every year. Because they didn't know why the Nile flooded. Yeah. They only knew that it did. And they're trying to create or what they understood in regards to science, it was some super being that caused the river to flood. So many, many, many early mythologies, not all of them, of course, but, and this is one of the theories about mythology, is that really it's a prehistoric science. And not only is it a prehistoric science, but it also anthropomorphizes a lot of natural powers and makes them, and in doing so, therefore, the human creature can speak to them, pray to them, ask them for favors.
I mean, in the past, yes, but I think in the current, in the modern day, where does, you know, where's the benchmark now, right? So the common thing is like, you know, as science progresses and as, you know, religion declines or whatever, or at least that's the viewpoint that people take, God retreats, right? So God retreated, and I think we talked about this in the last episode, God retreated from the trees and the rivers to, you know, a sky god, then it, or as, you know, at the same time, and it retreated then to a heaven like god. And then with like deism and stuff, God has become a sort of, well, not now, but I suppose during the days of the Enlightenment and a little bit after, God then became kind of a, you know, universe, pre-universe, kind of a, you know, non-emotional, connected to humans God, right? And now the most modern idea of God can be some sort of pantheism or some sort of like, you know, just emotional basis thing. So, but overall, deities have retreated into, at the end of the day, we know the explanations for some things, and it's going to sound like a lot like old school Ishak here, but like they retreated at the end of the day, and we know the reasons for a lot of these things. And but for the things that we don't know, we still sometimes attribute gods, but sometimes we also don't. Like even ideas like the creation of the universe, even as in that question where we don't even know, there are still other things we attribute to. So at the end of the day, what's the power of the priest now, right? What's the power? Back then, it was a mediator between the gods and humanity. But if we know, you know, the origins of those gods in the natural world, which we mostly understand, if not in totality, and at least on Earth, like, what's the power of the priest other than an emotional, you know, support guide, I suppose?
Well, growing up in the Catholic religion, I would say that you still go to a priest for confession, and he becomes the mediator to God. And he also reenacts the Last Supper every Sunday at Mass.
But what is, that's the thing, what is that God in that context? Because the God in that context, and, you know, as a former Muslim, whatever, it's the God in that context is the God of, like, the Middle Ages, in a certain sense, but it modernized, like, it's the God of these religions, modernized to be much more universal, much more, like, all-encompassing, and I don't see a little bit more logical than, like, things like Zeus and Ra. But at the end of the day, their bases are still from these natural things from so long ago, you know? So it's like the whole idea of mediating and like talking to God is nothing more than, you know, emotional comfort to me, at least.
Well,
seems.
I think some people actually believe they're talking to God. Oh, yeah. or some people to gods.
Yeah.
I believe they actually, depend on the individual, of course, they believe they are talking to a deity. And it goes back to Martin Buber and his idea of the vow, the I thou. I'm speaking to God or this God or that goddess, and they are hearing me, and in a way I can sense a conversation going on. For instance, let me give you a quote, okay? This is from St. Augustine. It's from his Confessions, okay? It's from chapter 1. And listen to how he addresses God. Great are you, O Lord, and greatly to be praised. Great is your power of your wisdom. There is no end. And man, being a part of your creation, desires to praise you. Man who bears about with him his mortality, the witness of his sins, even the witness that thou resistest the proud. Yet man, this part of your creation, desires to praise you. Thou movest us to delight in praising you, for you have formed us for yourself, and our hearts are restless till they find rest in you. Lord, teach me to know and understand which of these should be first, to call on you or to praise you, and likewise to know you or to call upon you. But who is there that calls upon you without knowing you? For he that knows you not may call upon you as other than you are. Or perhaps we call on you that we may know you. But how shall they call on him in whom they have not believed? Or how shall they believe without a preacher? And those who seek the Lord shall praise him. For those who seek him shall find him. and those who find him shall praise him. Let him seek you, Lord, in calling on you, and call on you in believing in you, for you have been preached unto us. O Lord, my faith calls on you, that faith which you have imparted to me, which you have breathed into me through the incarnation of your Son, through the ministry of your preacher.
Wow.
Right? That he believes he is speaking directly to God and God is hearing him. I mean, I didn't count how many times you shows up in this, but it shows up a real lot.
Yeah. It's again, it's very personal and direct.
And there's a real mythology there. I think that's the heart of mythology, is that I-thou relationship with the deity.
I think it was not intentional, but I think we should go into a song since we just did a poem.
You want to tell us about the song?
Are we doing a...
We're doing one of your new songs?
It didn't come up,
unfortunately.
Oh, it didn't? Yeah, it's probably because it's private.
It just went to your homepage.
Yeah, I mean, Tabula Rasa is kind of a long song. It's like, what, like 10, 11 minutes,
15?
I think?
15.
15, yeah. It's we can do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so this song is called, it's a single, Tabula Rasa. It means blank slate. So to give some background on it, it was just early morning and it was a really nice, the mountains looked nice and I wanted to take pictures of them and I did. And I drew a foam and I have a pretty nice view. So by that time, the sun was coming up. So I took a picture, got inspired from it. And it's supposed to be kind of a sequel to the previous release called Again. So basically, Again is supposed to represent the, I suppose, destruction of all reality, I suppose. And Tabula Rasa is like the blank slate starting over. That's why, if you look at the album covers, the previous one is empty, dark. And this one's kind of bright with mountains. Like, it's kind of starting. It's a blank slate starting over again.
I like this one a lot.
Yeah, so this one's it's also much more bright than the other one, which is much more dark atmospheric. But yeah, this is a Tabula Rasa, Vacarch, V-A-C-A-R-C-H, new album coming out
or next week. I will link everyone to the Ushik's Bandcamp.
Also on Spotify and iTunes. And
Spotify and iTunes. Anyway, this is Tabula Rasa.
There you go.
Our thoughts tonight. We are back, and I think Sean is going to read some poetry to lead us into our next segment. Am I correct?
I am. I have two poems, right? The first poem harks back to our previous conversation, and it adds another twist to it, which I think we didn't really address, but I think which is vitally important, and that is the importance of nature to early man. We touched upon it, but we didn't stress it as much as we probably should. The cycles of seasons, including rains, different weather. We mentioned the flood of the Nile. We forget sometimes how vital that is every day, even today, you know, to produce the crops that we eat. But because we're not attached to the earth, because most of us don't work on fields or farms, most of us tend to forget that.
Yeah.
But if you're working on a field or farm, you're very much aware of the seasons. And this goes back, this poem actually dates back to about 1350 BC. It's called Adoration of the Disc, by King Akhenaten and Princess Neferiu Aten. King Akhenaten reigned from about 1350 to 1334 BC. And this poem is translated by Robert Hillier. The cattle roam again across the fields. Birds flutter in the marsh and lift their wings, also in adoration. And the flocks run with delight through all the pleasant meadows. Both north and south along the dazzling river, ships raise their sails and take their course before thee. And in the ocean, all the deep sea fish swim to the surface to drink in thy light. The chick within the egg, whose breath is thine, who runneth from its shell, chirping its joy and dancing on its small, unsteady legs to greet the splendor of the rising sun. The next poem comes from ancient Ireland, and it's called, let me flip the page here, it's called The Mystery, and it's attributed to Aimergan. Now, Dr. Douglas Hyde, who's a great Irish scholar of the 19th century,
mm-hmm.
writes in his Literary History of Ireland that the first poems written in Ireland were said to have been those of Emergan, who was brother of Ever, and Eremon, the first Milesian princes who colonized Ireland many hundreds of years before Christ. He adds that the three pieces of verse ascribed to Emergan are very ancient and very strange, but the whole story of the Milesian invasion is wrapped in mystery. No faith can be placed in the alleged date or genuineness of Emergan's verses. Irish tradition has always represented them as being the first verses made in Ireland. And before I read the poem, I would like to point out that what this poem stresses is the connection of all things, of the human creature with all things, which is a very mythopoeic view of the world, which we have largely lost because of science. Although I don't say that detrimentally, science is certainly good, but it has created a disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
So this is called The Mystery, attributed to Emergan and translated by Douglas Hyde. I am the wind which breathes upon the sea. I am the wave of the ocean. I am the murmur of the billows. I am the ox of the seven combats. I am the vulture upon the rocks. I am a beam of the sun. I am the fairest of plants. I am a wild boar in valor. I am a salmon in the water. I am a lake in the plain. I am a word of science. I am the point of the lance of battle. I am the god who created in the head the fire. Who is it who throws light into the meeting on the mountain? Who announces the ages of the moon? Who teaches the place where couches the sun, if not I?
Wow.
It's embodying the nature, if anything. Yeah. That your point about science, and I know you don't mean detrimental, like you said, but it's interesting because pretty much throughout this whole thing, I was thinking about this distinction between self and nature. And I mean that in a very broad sense, not just nature and like as in trees and stuff, but also the objective world. And it's going to go much more philosophical, but I want to add in this thing because this whole idea of being within nature and being outside of nature is a big idea of this. And that YouTuber I mentioned to you today, his recent stuff about mm-hmm. the environment, he touches upon this. I don't want to incorporate his ideas here. Like, it's science and philosophy's fault in terms of separating the self out of its surrounding world, because that's, you know, it's a big topic within those fields. But it's funny, as Heidegger would put it, and as well as that YouTuber, the whole idea of being within nature, which is much more practical, it's natural, and it's, I suppose, realistic in a certain sense, where people back in those days didn't, yes, they viewed nature as this, but living within nature, they were within it. They weren't just, you know, they were still attributing things from the nature to the gods or whatever, but they were within that bios, within the biosphere of the earth.
Can we mention here the myth of the myth of Gaia?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, actually, that was my next point, where this whole idea of like the interpersonal relationship with gods, right? If the gods have their base and their roots in nature, these people who have their entire lives based within nature and it's dictated and it's their entire reality, it's who they are. It's not so much of a confusing statement to say that the reason for these interpersonal deities stem from that source, where nature itself is so ingrained and so you know, just within those people's lives. Really, it's not a big reach to say that that's the root for the interpersonal connection with God nowadays. Even I would say, you know, because even though we have that disconnect now, I would still suspect that has its roots to that idea.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, you know, we sound like we're sort of banging on science, but all of us are very much advocates of science.
Yeah.
The wonders of modern astronomical discoveries, I just find absolutely breathtaking. you know, they've gone, they can trace back the hum of the Big Bang, you know, 14 billion light years out in space.
Really?
Yeah. They've traced like the hum of the Big Bang.
Wow.
Right. It was an accidental discovery, but they did.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And a lot of scientists are becoming, maybe not believing in God, but becoming sometimes somewhat spiritual.
Yeah.
Again.
I think so, yeah.
But I think all of us here are also starch Darwinists. That, you know, that we're not backward thinkers as far as science goes. But yeah, science, going back to Aristotle and even early Socrates before he became involved in the search for justice, he was a natural scientist.
It's funny because I think we're touching upon a topic that we talked about a few episodes back. I suppose the limits of science. In that episode, we talked about, or at least I talked about, the literal limits of science where it comes to, like, you know, perception and, you know, cognitive limits. Yeah, we all talked about that. But I think another, again, we're not trying to be anti-science, but another thing is not only the literal limits of science, but maybe in a certain sense that the potential, I guess much more emotional here, but like the question is like, are we meant to discover these things, you know, being such, you know,
curious,
being such curious, but also being beings in nature, being beings in the earth, being beings in the literal roots of the earth, right?
Yeah, but doesn't that largely depend on how advanced the creature is? I mean, the slug on the sidewalk really doesn't care where it came from, or you know, whether we circle around the sun or the sun circles around us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm just thinking like in terms of like as science goes into further and further fields, especially with like, you know, quantum stuff or whatever, and the universe is already a whole mystery, and even other questions, like it's almost like, I'm not trying to make any stance here, but like it concerns us, but is it also like, it's not, I get the whole example with the slug in the sidewalk. I don't know. We're pretty advanced creatures, and I'm sure, you know, I know slugs are pretty, you know, slugs are advanced as, you know, in their own sets. But like a slug is not, it may not be, you know, it's not natural for it to be on a sidewalk, and we're not natural to be on the moon. But I wouldn't say a slug is natural to learn rocket science, just as I don't, maybe one day we might not be natural enough to learn whatever. This is going back to a previous topic in the episodes, but the whole idea of like being the beings that we are we knocking at doors that not meant to enter, but like, are we knocking at doors that we are literally not able to enter?
Well, if you say we're not supposed to enter, we're not, that implies is there's some power up there that's preventing us.
I don't necessarily mean that. It doesn't have to be a power.
It could be like evolutionary.
Evolution, that's exactly what I mean. Like, you know, like,
what would be a scenario that you could think of that? Give me a for instance.
So one thing that was talked about in that episode, this is kind of, I mostly mean a different sense in this sense, but it is an example, right? The whole ideas of perception, right? The whole ideas of like the senses and whatnot. And we're getting by that through technology, but even, this is much more conceptual, metaphysical, but like even ideas of that go beyond the ideas of, and I remember we talked about this, quantity and space and time and quality, like literal concepts that we are not capable of understanding, right? And those concepts that we have are evolutionarily based, right? That's a metaphysical example, but it's something much more, I don't know, it's something that's much more literal, might be the quantum field, right? Which does incorporate the same thing. Ideas of photons or whatever not inhabiting any literal space but actually still being there. It's getting into areas where it's so almost anti-human, evolutionarily speaking. And that's still conceptual in its talk, but my point right now is, I suppose, the value of it. Like, the value of apes, really, trying to study like the cosmos. It's kind of like, if you put it in that perspective, I think it's, at least in the sense of values, it's very weird.
Well, let's circle back to mythology now. And that actually leads us back, because of the theory that ideological myths, which explain natural phenomena, right? They are a form of very, very early science.
Yeah.
that the human creature is trying to explain the environment in which they live. And let's take the one of the more famous myths from Greek mythology, the myth of Demeter and Persephone. When Persephone is abducted by Hades. And the result of that abduction is that Persephone, because she ate a pomegranate seed in the underworld, has to live part of the year in the underworld, and the other part of the world she can the other part of the year she can live in the upper world. Therefore, we have winter and summer, because her mother, Demeter, who is the goddess of grain, and she causes winter because she's in sadness for the loss of her daughter. And then spring comes when her daughter returns. So that myth to them scientifically explains, and I use the term very loosely scientifically there, but that's their science which explains why we have seasons.
So, I mean, I think it's just a natural, you know, drive of humanity to try to answer questions, obviously.
It's one of the things that actually makes us really, really unique.
Yeah, exactly.
Not many creatures have curiosity. Dogs certainly do.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, you want a dog, Tofu, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He's very curious, I'll bet.
Definitely, too much.
And I'll bet if you had a baboon or a gibbon in your house, right?
Curious,
or an elephant,
yeah,
even in your house, if you could fit it in.
So would it be a mammalian thing?
Well, it's an advanced creature thing.
Okay.
Right? You know, maybe it is a mammalian thing.
I don't even know about advanced. I think it's more of just the circumstance that those animals are in, right? In the wild world, right? So, like, I'm sure those animals or, you know, the precursors regarding evolution had some sort of basis where curiosity or I mean, I'm sure curiosity has some sort of root in some sort of evolutionary thing. Like, I don't know. It might be just helpful to scavenge around. Maybe those animals that all share that quality might have an ancestor in the scavenging world.
Wouldn't it be interesting to ask matriarch elephant, you know, in a herd of elephants, ask the matriarch of the herd, you know, do you have any concept of future? Do you ever think about where you came from?
Yeah.
Maybe they understand as it is. They don't need to ask the questions.
Be in the moment.
We just don't know.
Right, but they certainly know what they have to do at a certain time, and they certainly think in terms of like animals like wolves and certainly elephants, we have to reach that water hole.
Right.
So they go on these long pilgrimages to water holes. And it's the advanced, getting back to the wise elder, it's the older elephants that can lead the younger ones so they learn the route too in time, and they become the elders so they can lead the whole herd to that.
I think it's well, that's the thing where, like, how special humans are. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, the same pathway to those animals take, evolutionary speaking, is somewhat the same path that we took in our own different ways. So, like, you know, they know to go to the water because that's what will help them survive. They don't have any concept of that, but they have, I suppose, maybe awareness, but, you know, the instinct to do that, right? So, and I think that it's the same thing for us. It's just, I think we have that whole variable of being able to literally, I don't want to say think about it, but able to conceptualize it and think of it in separate form than the reality of it, right? We can think of the apple without seeing the apple.
Well, how about put it this way? So the elephant knows that it has to get to the water hole, right? It has enough cognizance to think that we have to go there, and they know when to go there, right? The human creature, though, takes it a step further and wants to know why the water hole's there. And that comes down to science. And that goes back, again, to mythology, because we seem to be slipping away from mythology quite a bit. But that goes back to early man, just simply out of curiosity, which is, you know, many animals have curiosity. They want to know why. And I think that's one of the driving forces behind these early ideological myths, scientific myths, I'll call them, okay? Curiosity. Why does this happen? Why does that happen?
Well, trying to go back to that, because the thing is, this whole basis of this why question, and I wouldn't even call it the why question, the whole concept of why, which is at the basis of mythology and religion and anything really, like, where does that why come from? And so, like, one thing I was thinking about was, like, you know, the creation of, like, weaponry and tools, right? So, like, these things, like, that in itself is rare, is really, like, for example, like, the ape might hold the rock and smash it over the other ape, right? It may not, it may see that thing as a tool to get the job done, but it doesn't really, and this is so weird to even say it, but it's not a tool, it's something that he uses, right?
He conceptualizes how to use it.
Yeah, he conceptualizes how to use it, maybe the purpose of, not the purpose, but maybe what it's capable of. And so where the human differs is like the innovation forward from that, where it's like, okay, what can I make in order to hunt this animal, right? While the ape might be like, okay, I know this thing hurts me. I know when my friend ape hit me with a rock, it hurt. Maybe that's, I can use that somehow. But he doesn't like go out of his way to like, okay, let's put the stick and the rock together. Let's sharpen the rock and use a spear.
Let's take that a step further.
Yeah.
Right? Who put the rock there?
Or that, yeah. So, and I think that's the step further from that. So first, I think you have this sort of, again, there's still those little, those mini steps in between the rock and the spear and the spear and where the materials came from. There's little mini steps that I'm not sure what the answers might be, but like, I don't know. Like, for example, you have the innovation, right? You have the innovation, and I'm sure at the end of the day, it's probably some sort, it's probably just something in the brain, right? As there's a difference between, you know, the human brain, the ape brain, that probably facilitates that. That's probably the simple answer. But that innovation, and from that innovation, the further question of, okay, what else can I make? Oh, let's hope we have visitors.
All right. Let's take a quick break here. Save your thought here, and we'll be right back, everyone. Yeah, right. Our thoughts tonight. We are back. And we're going to continue on where we were. And Sean, you were going to mention something?
Yeah, we were talking before about the cognizance of various creatures and who could imagine a future or foresee a future or who could just exist in the moment and who worked out a habit, who worked out a tradition. Mm-hmm. And if we look at the evolution of the human creature, archaeologists have come to the conclusion that at some point the human creature started to think about something more than survival. For instance, burial started to take place, right? And also a really good example is the cave paintings that are found throughout Europe, not just Lascaux, but all over Europe. There's many, many cave paintings. And these date back many, many centuries. Some, they think, go back to about 30,000 BC. But the first thoughts about what we would call religion or mythology probably go back to Cro-Magnon man. Yeah. Before that, the human creature was mostly involved with just survival and getting to the next water hole, getting to the next place where there was game or fruits that they could eat and gather. So when we get to the Cro-Magnon man and say specifically the cave paintings, which are probably a really good example because we have in them, we have paintings of some quite strange creatures, what look like human creatures with horns on their head and various conglomerate animals. And they are back in the darkest, deepest caves of where humans took shelter at that time. Yeah. And that seems to be the first religious, mythological views that people started to formulate about trying in some way to propitiate or control nature to their benefit, which seems to be the origins of mythology.
I think we're creating a sort of a almost like a step or a ladder of this evolution thing. Because so the thing I was going to say originally is the I suppose the pre-step or the step before what you're talking about, which I think I have a term for. I'll mention in a minute. But like So you have this, you know, this, you know, the burial sites, the, you know, spirits, you know, eventually, but overall a sense of like, you know, almost like purpose, like almost like a sort of like value beyond practicality. It's still probably based on practicality.
No, I think it is based on practicality.
Yeah, it's based, but it's the feeling of it is not, you know, it's not for survival. It's more, it's still based off like, you know, it's because of this.
No, I think I would differ with that. Because I believe a lot of those paintings and a lot of those practices are to produce a good hunt.
Well, but in a sense where it's not direct. So it's yes and no. So the thing is, they're based on those things of this emotional value. Also, like maybe like, you know, bury the dead because it's, you know, appease the spirit, so, you know, it might help us in the, you know, in the hunt or whatever, right? So there is that practicality, but it's less direct and much more, it's much more, it's invoking of thought. It's invoking of, the word I was going to use is imagination. It's invoking of sidesteps. Instead of like, you know, improve the spear, it's thinking, okay, the side way of helping the hunt or something. But overall, I think it's much more based in thought and in belief and in sense of maybe even emotion. But the previous step that I was going to say, though, that I wanted to mention was the whole idea of the step after the spear and the whole idea of why these things are, and then from why those things are into attributing those things to possibly spiritual means and thus creating a sense of thought. So the thing I was going to say was like, you know, you create the spear, right? And you find use in it, right? And once you find use in it, you try to improve it. So what will the prehistoric human do? Look for, either look literally into where the rock and the stick comes from, or try maybe even attribute, maybe from, because of the use, because of the actual use of that material of the rock and of the tree and of all these things, the attribute the possibly the actual use of these things either to a literal discovery of the material of these trees that's in the rocks, or attributing spirits or whatever, some sort of spiritual value. And then once we get into, you know, early religion, or I wouldn't even say religion, just belief, you know, spiritual beliefs, from there, it's yeah, practicality is still in there, and it's, you know, it's basically, it's all coming from the same thing, but it's diverging into this other path of a thought, an idea.
I think what's occurring along the lines of what you're saying is that we can see a continuum that early man makes appeals to nature or imitates actions that may help their hunt for the sake of survival. All right. So for many, many millenniums, going back to perhaps 30,000 BC, as I said before, when, and I'm not sure the burials go back, you know, much farther, but the cave paintings seem to go back to about 30,000 BC, that there is some appeasement to the gods that helps the human creature survive. And I think that's the key word is, or the key phrase, to help them survive. And that's even true up through many of the first civilizations. How can we appease the gods that this city, and I'm talking about the age of the first cities, like maybe 10,000 BC, mm-hmm. Jericho, Sumer, and also the cities in the Indus River Valley and the Yellow River Valley in China. How can we appease these gods that the crops will grow and we will have enough to survive the winter? And I think that even carries through, not so directly, but for protection of the city later on. So it moves a little bit away from survival of just shelter and food and water to protection from enemies. And eventually survival in the next world, for instance, in many contemporary religions, I pray to the god or God, depending on your belief, I pray to the gods, goddesses, or God, so that when I leave this life, I will survive in the next life in a comfortable manner. whether that manner is Elysium, paradise, heaven, right?
Yeah, it's still based off it, but I think we're still, I think there's still the whole, the missing question, not the question, but just why a spirit in the first place? So the whole thing of like the why question, right? So like, and the thing I was just thinking about while you're talking about this was about, it's going to sound very weird, but like, you know, at the end of the day, religion, you know, a lot of these deities are very much personified. You know, it's very, very human. Or even if they're not human, they're humanoid, right? So they're very, they're based on like consciousnesses. They're based off of like these living beings. You know, even if they're some, you know, crocodile-headed god, at the end of the day, they're still based off like beings, right? These consciousnesses, right? So, and a thing that is, I wonder, you know, in the journey of the prehistoric man trying to find, you know, maybe a better way to help his, you know, hunt, you know, either improve his spear or to explain why the spear worked in the first place. And I mean, we touched on this, but I think it's still interesting how there was nothing the guy could find other than say, well, at the end of the day, I created the spear. My, you know, I don't obviously think they're thinking of this in a very conceptual way, but it's like, my conception, you know, I had the ability to create this. I had the ability to do this and I had some sort of effect. And the only thing that can really do that is something else. It's another thing that has that sort of consciousness.
Well, can I word that another way? And it's the human creature's search for trying to find some way that they at least feel they're controlling their environment.
Or maybe they're capable of controlling their environment. I suppose you're saying like the creation of deities is, you know, symbolic of the control of, you know.
Well, you first recognize the deities there.
Yeah.
And they first recognize these deities as natural powers. They didn't anthropomorphize them until much later. The first deities were simply the wind, the rain, the river. And I think that's reflected in a lot of, even in words of Greek mythology, the Nereids, the Dryads, these creatures that were the thing, were the tree, were the water, were the grass. And I'm not an anthropologist. I don't know how far back those terms go, but I wonder if they preceded the great gods themselves, like Zeus. But even, and we can go into the whole family tree of where Zeus comes from, you know, going back to Cronus and Uranus. But I'm not sure that's necessary. But originally they were simply powers in nature that the human creature sought somehow to appease and maybe even control to make the human creature's life better.
So I see that. I'm just talking about the whole step of attributing that natural phenomenon as a power in the first place. So like, there's the idea of appeasement, okay, because like, you know, the river helps me live, so I must, you know, the river must help me. I must find a way for the river to help me. So where does that step take? When does a human say, okay, I need somehow for this river to help me? It must be some sort of, it must have some sort of awareness, some sort of beingness to it that I may appease. Yeah. You know what I mean? Where, you know, when does that happen? Like, when does the human say, okay, when this thing is an actual enough thing that I can actually, I was going to say that.
Well,
desperation.
No, it is a certain, it's not desperate. I think it's a matter of level of consciousness.
I think it's still desperation, but I think it's, I mean desperation in that sense of a bad thing, but it's like, they're just not capable of finding any other way to do it. So it's attributing, and this is much more of a theory, I don't really know if this is the case, but attributing what's worked for the guy, his own consciousness, and I don't mean like, you know, the human part of it, but a sense of awareness and sense of like, this thing is conscious of what's going on. If that's the only way for me to get my food.
Well, let's face it, life in nature, if all these modern amenities were taken away from us, life in nature would be very, very hard. right? We'd be part of the food chain every day. And if we had to go out and search for our own food and survival, every day would be a desperate struggle, right? And trying to find some way to make that struggle at least seem easier or develop enough consciousness to maybe imagine that there are powers out there that if I just, you know, I mean, say I get caught in a thunderstorm, right? That's the huge power there. For anybody who's caught, you know, been caught up in the mountains in a thunderstorm knows that it's a very deadly experience. I've crawled under a number of rocks myself to escape lightning. But I know where lightning comes from because of modern science. But the prehistoric human, or even, you know, well into history, historic people didn't know what caused lightning. And therefore, they're trying to, is it a power that, why is it attacking me? Did I do something wrong? Right? And I think getting back to the idea of that American poem where I'm part of this greater whole and there's a consciousness around me everywhere. Think of like the Aborigines in the Aboriginal culture in Australia, right? The whole world's alive. Every rock's alive, right? And I'm part of that. How do I make that work for me?
It's the thing I was thinking about with that was, you know, you said the word power, right? So, like, it feels like there's a sense of deep connection between the actual consciousness and awareness and power itself. For example, you know, I'm supposed it can go both ways, right? So you have this human who is conscious and viewing the natural world that is full of power, not like being powers, but that has power, right? And this human being who is able to somewhat exert his own power through his awareness and somewhat, I suppose, in his mind, get a glimpse of that power.
Maybe influence is a better word than power.
I think I'm going to go with power again because, okay. Well, in this context, sure, influence, but I think that's going to extend to the actual, like, creation of a power, right? So, again, it's going to go both ways. The conscious being attributing his consciousness as power to the world around him, which has powers, in a sense, also giving them consciousness. And in the same way backwards, we're seeing the world in that lens as having power, giving himself consciousness. It's very like weird. It's very Hegelian shit. But like,
and that's where we're going to move on to the next consciousness segment, and power. Ladies and gentlemen. Once shit goes Schopenhauer.
Hegel.
I think I'm going Hegel.
actually, this is very much...
Somebody throw a pail of water on it.
It does sound very Hegel, Hegelian.
Earlier, for those of you that listen enough, Sean was like, what was it? Ashok was like, I'm going to go Schopenhauer here. And Sean was like, oh no, he's going Schopenhauer. Everybody duck.
Kill all the babies.
I think that was my favorite joke out of 2020. I kid you not.
Oh my gosh, I'm right at the end of the year.
Yeah, right? You caught it. All right, so you have another poem, and then we're going to...
You do, Sean?
Yes. Okay, and then we're going to take a short break, and we're going to go to some quiz questions.
This is another old poem. It's translated by Percy Bysshe Shelley, the famous romantic poet who lived from 1792 to 1822. He entitles it Homer's Hymn to Earth, Mother of All. Actually, what it is, it's one of the ancient Homeric hymns, and they call them Homeric hymns because they use the same poetic meter that Homer used, and they come from about the same period, 700 to 800 BC, and they are poems to the various gods and goddesses. Probably existed in the oral tradition long before they were written down, about 500 BC. So it's called Homer's Hymn to Earth, Mother of All, as translated by Percy Bysshe Shelley. O universal mother, who dost keep from everlasting thy foundation steep, eldest of things, great earth, I sing of thee. All shapes that have their dwelling in the sea, all things that fly or on the ground divine live, move, and there are nourished. These are thine. These from thy wealth thou dost sustain. From thee fair babes are born, and fruits on every tree hang ripe and large, revered divinity. The life of mortal men beneath thy sway is held. Thy power both gives and takes away. Happy are they whom thy mild favors nourish. All things unstinted round them grow and flourish. For them endures a life-sustaining field, its load of harvest and their cattle yield, large increase, and their house with wealth is filled. Such honored dwell in cities fair and free, the homes of lovely women prosperously. Their sons exult in youth's new-budding gladness, and their fresh daughters free from cares or sadness, with bloom inwoven dance and happy song, on the soft flowers the meadow grass among. Leap round them sporting, such delights by thee are given, rich-powered, revered divinity. Mother of gods, thou wife of starry heaven, farewell. Be thou propitious, and be given a happy life for this brief melody. Nor thou, nor other songs shall unremembered be.
Best introduction.
Our thoughts tonight.
We're back
here to talk about the school of life.
Just kidding.
All right, here we go. So we have a game, just like last episode on part one. excuse me. I'm going to ask the three, now three, because Zach is here.
Yo, what's up?
For the last segment. I'm going to ask the three guests, panelists, whatever they're called, questions about mythology. And first one to five correct answers wins.
Can we steal each other's questions if they fail to answer?
Yes, correct. That's the new rule. Like Jeopardy. Okay.
Cool.
Now just give me 1 second to pull this up.
Okie dokie.
Monty, I want what's behind door number three.
All right. So who would like to go first?
Should we do a random number generator to make it even? Whatever. Who wants to go first?
Yeah, all right, yeah, let's do it. Okay, yeah. So
sure. Make all call me.
You talk first, so he goes
youngest still, yeah.
So the topic for the first set of questions...
Oh, no.
...will be... the topic for the first set of questions will be mythological punishments.
I only know a handful, so...
Okay.
I know, not a bit, but...
All right. So, Ashok.
All right.
This mythological character, and I believe they're Greek mythology, so just to narrow it down here.
Quite a bit, yes.
This mythological character was forced to complete 12 labors.
Who's Hercules? Or Heracles in Greek terms, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Damn it, I should have gone first.
Jeez, that was a gimme.
Yeah, I know.
So it's got to be like, you know, Gaia's second son's punishment with fucking Poseidon or something.
It's the first question. You know, it's like that in Bingo when they give you the middle space, you know?
Yeah.
All right.
I need all the gimmies I can get.
All right, Zach. So this Greek mythological character or entity, whatever they would be called, god, goddess... Demigod, deity, was bound to a rock where an eagle would eat his liver every day.
Was it a demigod or demigoddess?
I don't know. The reason for his punishment, I can give it to you, is he gave fire to humanity.
You know, I love Alien, bro.
Love Alien.
Aliens. I like Alien sequels.
Alien sequels. I know you're trying to give me. It's trying to give me a hint, but I don't know. Pass.
Prometheus.
Hey, you were supposed to pass.
Oh shoot! I'm sorry.
Yeah. I knew.
Oh, did I get it? Damn. So you would have got that.
I would have got.
I'll give you the point. I'll give you the point.
That the movie's. Yeah, that's true.
What do you mean?
Alien sequel Prometheus.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Okay.
And Prometheus is a Titan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so Sean, you get that one. Next round. So Ashik has one. Zach has zero, and Sean has one. Man, I can't believe I screwed that one. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I flubbed
it. Okay, so now we're moving on to, can you name the polytheistic religions by their main gods?
Oh, so
we're switching up topics like everything. Okay, gotcha.
Wow.
Okay. Oh man, this is going to be interesting to pronounce.
Can I use my calculator? Ashik,
are you ready?
Test?
Yep.
Okay. So, name the polytheistic religions by their main gods. Which polytheistic religion would be... I'm sorry, I'm trying to figure out the pronunciation. Anu, Ishtar, and Marduk.
Mesopotamian, Sumerian. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
All right, good one.
Another gimme.
It's the first two rounds, okay.
Mara's a great black metal band, too.
I wouldn't say it's a gimme.
All right. Name the polytheistic religion by its main gods. Zeus, Poseidon, and Hades.
It's Greek mythology.
Right? Yes.
That's a gimme.
All right.
Sean's like, where's my gimme?
He didn't even have to answer the question. He got it.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Jupiter, Neptune, and Pluto.
Roman.
Okay. You got it. Now we've got two, one, and two. Yeah. Now we're going to turn up the heat a little bit. Same topic for this one, because there's some good ones. Okay. I want to really test you guys out here. Okay, are you ready?
Sure.
Okay. Olorun, Oya, and Shango.
Is it Olorun?
Olorun, Oya, and Shango.
Can I ask how you spell Olorun?
Olorun.
Can you spell the other two?
Oya and Shango. I can use it in a sentence if you'd like.
Sure.
Would you like a definition?
I've heard of Olorun. I think I know what it is, but I'm not.
I don't know. I can't use it in a sentence.
Oh. Olorun. I might be confusing them with these guys. One more time, the names.
Okay. Name the polytheistic religion by its main gods. Olorun, Oya, and Shango.
I'm pretty sure it's an African one. I want to... Olorun, what? Olorun. Oh, no, it's Native... Is it Native American? No, it's... I know who Olorun is. I don't know their fucking culture. I don't know. Some West African Mali religion, Nigerian. Olorun sounds so familiar. I don't know the name. It's an African...
You got it.
Is it? Was it? Some sort of Nigerian Mali thing.
It is... Yoruba.
Yeah, it's in Nigeria. Yeah. Does that count?
Yeah, that counts.
All right, sure.
We'll give it to you. It's okay, Nigeria cool. And Benin.
Yeah, it's like the main tribe in
Nigeria. Wow, that was a tough one.
Yeah, I know. I think Olorun's the war god, right?
I have no idea.
Yeah,
I didn't even know what. I'm just reading the answers. I didn't even know what Yoruba was until now. I had to Google it to tell you if you were right or
cool.
not. Okay. All right, Zach, here we go. Now, Ashik has three. Zach has one. This is his chance to get two here.
Got to get in the game.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Vishnu, Shiva, and Ganesha are of the main gods of which polytheistic religion? Vishnu, Shiva, and Ganesha.
It's like Indian mythology?
Yeah, Hinduism.
Hinduism, sorry.
Nice going.
All right.
I knew Shiva, another one.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's 3-2, and Sean is 2 as well. Here we go. Are you ready, Sean?
I'm ready.
All right.
Bamastat.
Ibe, Wak, Hur, and Nidar are the main gods to which polytheistic religion?
Say or those names once more, please.
Eb or Ibi? Hur? E-E-B-E. Eb, Ibi. And it says Ibi slash Wak, W-A-A-Q. And then the next god's name is Hur. And the next god's name is Nidar, N-I-D-A-R, Nidar.
Wow.
Which polytheistic religion's main gods are they? Ibi, Hur, and Nidar.
My gosh, the clock is ticking. You know, I'm going to go with, just by the sounds of the names, I'm going to go with Polynesian.
Okay, I give you a question.
Does it?
Well, if I lose, you get a guess.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So
it is not Polynesian.
Okay. Can I give a guess on some sort of Native American, Hopi, Iroquois? Iroquois, let's just go with. I don't think it's going to be Iroquois, but.
No.
Okay. Well, okay.
Somali.
Oh.
Did you say that before?
Wait.
Yeah. Oh, Somali. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Earlier,
he said that.
Yeah. With, so Lord. That would be. So it's 3-2 now. All right. Let's change topics.
Right.
Let's change topics. That was a good one, though. All right. What are we looking at here? Ooh. Oh, shoot. All right. Where are we?
No, that Jedi religion, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I like that kind of mythology.
Yeah, right? You watched The Mandalorian Season 2 finale?
I watch everything. Don't say anything.
I already heard about it.
Yeah, he wanted me to spoil it. So
I heard about it. I don't want to give away spoilers.
I literally cry. I'm not even joking.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Cody cried.
I
was just
he
like,
cried?
Yeah, Cody.
God. A lot of people cry.
Oh,
I cried too.
Oh, gosh.
It's a
show. I can't say anything about that. I cried at the end of The Force Awakens when I saw Luke. Well, I didn't cry, but I was like, holy shit, man. Yeah. It was special.
We walked out of there so stoked, and then we came back a year later so disappointed.
It was special.
And then the movie after.
Okay, so my test is ready to go.
Horses on a
star. Are you guys ready?
Yeah, shoot.
Swish. Use the buttons to reveal their answers.
I guess you can just... Click.
Oh, okay. I have to choose another one. Okay, never mind. I got it. All right. So it is mythological monsters and their slayers.
Whoa.
Oh, okay.
Are we ready?
Oh, I ain't got this. All right.
Adventure.
Yeah.
This is Ashok, right?
Okay.
All right.
Who?
It's you?
Yeah.
Okay, it's so you've got three.
You
can really up the ante here, turn up the stakes or whatever.
All
the
need
expression
is two more. Let's do this.
Leap ahead.
Leap ahead.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Let's do this.
All right. Who slayed the bull of heaven?
The bull of heaven?
Yes.
The bull of... Whoa. What?
I'll give you a clue. Sumerian.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, wait. Isn't this... But isn't that... I have two guesses, and I feel like I should feel
stupid.
You
have two guesses? Why?
Huh?
Why do you have two guesses?
No, I have two guesses in my mind. Yeah.
Like,
the bull of
heaven. Changing the rules.
I make the rules here.
Is that the name? Bull of... Okay, so this is not my final answer.
We have three guesses.
Pardon me, Monty, but I have two guesses.
The thing is, this is not my final answer, but I'm feeling Gilgamesh's classic, but I know Marduk slew someone. So I feel like it's either two. The bull of heaven.
Trust your gut.
I don't. My gut says both. Marduk killed the mother. I know Gilgamesh threw that one creature. Was it the bull of heaven? Oh God! It's either two. I know. Ah, fuck.
These are the reasons why we can't sleep.
The bull of heaven. The bull of heaven. The bull of. fuck? It's Gilgamesh or Marduk. Marduk's a Scott. Fuck it, Gilgamesh. That's my gut answer.
Gilgamesh is your answer?
Yeah.
You got it.
Oh, God. I almost said Marduk. I was like, I forgot the name of the creature. Oh,
You're
my God.
You're able to keep it alive here. All right.
Whoa.
All right.
So did my hint help?
That was. Oh, it really did. I would not. I wasn't going to guess something like Chinese related. Because Bull of Heaven or something.
All right. Ashik has four. Now Zach has two, right? Uh-huh. Zach has two.
Yeah.
If anybody wants a beer, go ahead. Yeah. All right. Ready?
I got a fruit smoothie. Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. So Zach's got two. Ashik's got four. And Sean's got two. And it's Zach's turn. So
dang, he's doubling.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Who is the slayer of Medusa?
Isn't that Odysseus?
Is that your final answer?
I don't know. He's grabbing his microphone, so I'm going to guess that's not right. is it Perseus? I think it's Perseus.
It's gone. Oh, you got it.
All right, cool.
Right on. Zach is ripping.
I was going to steal that to win.
So four,
I know.
I was going to watch yourself. Yeah. We're going to Final Jeopardy after this. You could bet it all.
Yeah.
I bet one half fruit smoothie and a Shook's keys.
All right.
Back.
Are you ready, Sean?
I'm ready.
Oh, these are some good questions, I'll tell you what.
This is what I was saying earlier on that. It was just on my drink. I was like, Bama. Bama.
Who was the slayer of?
Terry King. Yeah.
Who was the slayer of the mythological creature, Harpy?
Well, the Harpies bothered Odysseus. But who killed the Harpy? Odysseus didn't kill the Harpy. The Harpy. Oh, no, they were part of the trilogy by Aeschylus. The Harpies were the goddesses of vengeance, and they show up in the trilogy by Aeschylus. And they are pacified eventually at the final trial in the final play of that series. They turn into the Eumenides, and they are tamed by Athena at the final trial.
So you think it's...
Well, she tamed them, but I don't know who destroyed them. She transformed them, but I don't know...
Well, it seems like you're saying there's a single harpy. So it,
yes.
So it's not the
I'm
whole...
I'm not familiar with the harpy. I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, harpy is like a... It's almost like a... It's mythological.
It's like a bird.
Like people. Yeah.
It's a bird with a huge beak and it's ugly.
So it's supposed to be a specific harpy killed.
Yeah, the anthropomorphication of vengeance.
Oh, okay. So, did you want to... Give up on
Do you
that?
Think it's Athena? Is that what you're saying? Or are you saying that Athena's
well,
the one
well, Athena
them?
Just tamed them and transformed them.
Maybe
and
it's
so
Odysseus,
maybe
then.
Sorry, I'm not saying that.
Maybe the correct answer, although it wouldn't he didn't actually destroy them. Maybe the answer would be Orestes.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah, I'll give that as my final answer.
It's Jason.
Jason.
Jason,
okay.
Who the hell is that guy?
Jason the Argonauts.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I
such a that's just a normal name nowadays.
Jason, yeah.
Jason,
yeah. My buddy saw, Jason,
the guy drinking the monsters,
slaying
in
the harpies.
Parking lot.
Okay.
I saw the guy at the bar.
So it's 4-3-2 right now. Wow.
Got it.
All right. I didn't think this was a turn of events here.
Hey, what's the cap again? Is it 5?
5.
So actually, who won the last? Yeah, it is 5.
We got deadlocked, and then at the final one,
Sean's
won,
right? Yeah. Okay, so now if you win,
I win.
You guys are going to Final Jeopardy.
Okay. All right,
here we go.
I'll be an innocent bystander.
And if Zach wins, that would be, you lose. So if Zach wins, Zach and Sean go to Double Jeopardy. Or not Double Jeopardy, Final Jeopardy.
Okay. Yeah. I'm still a little confused.
Which would be one question for both people, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
Yeah, okay, all right.
Ladies and gentlemen, This is Ashok could take it all the way to Final Jeopardy here.
I can
with
also
this
steal
last
someone's
question.
Question, right? Or can I do that? Can I answer someone else?
Not if,
if you don't win.
Five.
I mean, if you get it here, you're done. You win.
But how about if I lose? Can I steal Zach or Sean's question?
No, you're done. No. It's the next round then.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
So I don't have the ability to steal because I'm always going first.
You're still. If you miss this question, you're still in the game.
No, I'm still in the game. But if I miss this question and I know Zach's answer, can I steal his question?
No,
if he doesn't get it
first, then it comes right to you.
Okay.
So if one of these guys don't get it, you can take their question.
Okay.
You already have. You took Sean's question at one point.
Did I?
Yeah, and you got it wrong. I think.
Okay. All right.
Something like that.
I mean,
we can go
that
back
happened,
and check.
But I'm not sure if that was. something
like that happened. I remember you taking somebody's question.
Okay, and that was by the rules.
Yeah.
Too.
So if you get it wrong, Zach gets the next guess.
Yeah.
If he gets it wrong, I get the next guess. If I get it wrong, you get the next guess. So it just goes around and around until one of us get it.
Like I'm ever going.
Obviously new at this.
Okay. Well, let's just go with the question. Let me get it.
Are you ready?
Sure.
Drum roll, please.
Who slayed the mythological creature Yamata no Orochi?
Oh, dude, you got this, bro.
Oh, God, the Chinese.
Now that's a gimme.
What was the name? Yeah. What?
Who slayed...
Kutama Aragachi or something?
The mythological creature, the multiple-headed dragon Yamata no Orochi. Yamata no Orochi. Orochi.
Oh,
Orochi, sorry.
Sounds
Japanese.
The only real deities I know in Japan are Izanami and Izanagi. So whichever one's the male one, I think it's Izanagi or something.
Is that your final question?
It's either
answer?
One of those two, yeah.
Susano is the answer.
No, I don't know.
Okay.
I should have gone to Zach.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, you're right. Oh,
did you know?
No.
Okay.
I was going to say Sekiro.
I didn't know. I'll confess ignorance as well.
Okay. I figured no one would get that one unless you're from Japan.
His name's Gatana. I'm a slicer.
All right. So, Zach.
Yes.
You've got three here. Who slayed the multiple-headed serpent type of creature, mythological creature?
Hercules.
It looks like in... it's not your final answer because it's a different mythology.
Okay, yeah, go.
All right. So I even narrowed it down for you a little bit. Oh. Who slayed the multiple-headed serpent, Jiangyu?
Jiangyu? Oh, is it the same guy that killed that?
Now you guys are really bad with your oriental languages. I speak some Chinese.
I don't speak Zhang Yun.
Oh, shit. I just told you what it was.
Well, I think it was pretty obvious.
Zhang Yu.
Zhang Yu.
I don't know. I don't know any Chinese.
I don't know either, man.
Yu the Great.
Yu the Great.
Yeah.
Oh, that's his name. Oh, I thought you were just talking to me. I was like, thanks, man.
Yu the Great.
I was like, man.
I'm glad you gave that answer.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, shit. I forgot. I'm not supposed
to. Oh, he did it again.
Oh, damn.
Sean, did you know?
I guess if nobody calls it, I can read the answer.
I knew it was Chinese, but I didn't know who.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you don't have to answer.
It was you, man. You the Great.
Oh, man.
You
the Great.
Zhang Liu was the mythological creature. Also another multiple-headed serpent. So the first one, Yamata no Orochi.
I think I've heard of the name. But.
Was like a multiple-headed dragon. Kind of looks like the Dragon Ball Z one.
Yeah.
Then there was Jiangyu, which is like a snake with multiple heads. And now we're going to another multiple-headed serpent figure for Sean's question here. And I might butcher this one, so I'm also going to spell it out. Who slayed the mythological creature Heren Shuge? Or Herensuge. Herensuge.
So the question is even like, what mythology did that come from?
I think it's all in the same mythology, right?
No. That sounds closer to Europe.
You're getting warmer. Herensuge. Herensuge.
Herensuge.
S-U-G-E. Suge.
Suge. Herensuge.
Okay, I'm going to take a really wild guess here. All right? I'm going to say Thor.
It is not Thor.
This is not... I have a...
something.
For some weird reason, I'm thinking Persian mythology, but I don't think it's going to be Persian.
I have no idea what this one is.
Okay. I'll just give a guess and say I don't even know is the guy's name. It's like Shirvan or Arvon or something like that.
It is not. It is Saint Michael.
The name of the dragon?
No.
What?
The guy who's slaying.
No, I know, but the name of the dragon that he slays is called Heron Sug.
Yes.
Wow.
I did not know that. Wow.
I've never even heard that story.
Well, it's St. Michael killing the dragon or whatever, but I never knew the dragon had that name.
Oh, it's St. George killing the dragon.
Oh, so who the St. George. Who the hell is St. Michael?
St. George Michael.
Bro. His name is Michael.
St. Michael.
St. Mick of the Irish.
Okay, let's look it up here, just so maybe the quiz is wrong.
I'm you the great. My dad's St. Michael.
Okay. Heron Sug is the name of a mythological dragon in the Basque language. In Basque mythology, dragons appear sparingly, sometimes with seven heads.
That's Europe and not Europe at the same time. Wow.
That's cool.
St. Michael. It says, when the chains that tie his ankles are bitten by the dragon and he sees no way of defeating it, the knight prays to St. Michael to save him. In heaven, the archangel is notified, but he refuses to enter the fight without God. The archangel arrives with God over his head and decapitates the dragon, liberating Theodosio from his chains and ending his penance. All right. And the rounds continue on. It'd be funny if you asked me
that and I just gave him that whole entire answer.
I consider myself enlightened.
Yeah, all right.
That's wow.
That was a cool story.
Yeah, it was.
Moving on now. We're going home all the way with this.
So this goes to Zach now.
Yeah.
Is it going to Zach now?
That's going to me.
No, because you missed it.
What?
You missed the carryover. Well, that's okay. Whatever you got.
Does it go like that?
I don't know.
Well, so does that count as a question?
It kind of went because in the...
Well, they don't do that. Okay, all right. Never mind. Yeah.
No, wait, what's going on?
What were you going to say?
Well, we did both rules because in the beginning, Zach... Sorry, not Zach. Sean was able to take Zach's answer, so we skipped him. But then
is that what happened?
In the beginning, and then I failed answering Sean's question in like the next round, and then I went again. So we did both rules, okay. So it's up to you.
Oh, I didn't notice
that. We did it both.
Okay, well, let's...
give it to Zach. I mean, sorry.
Let's skip you.
Yeah,
you're ahead.
Let's give it to him. give it to him. Yeah.
Okay, all right.
That way,
whatever you think is fair,
I want to give it to him, because then if we skip him, he'll be like, man... If you guys didn't skip me, I would have won.
Okay, just give it to me.
If he fails over and over, then I won't feel bad.
I mean, we're having hard questions, so I might. I'm very likely I won't get it.
About all these Japanese and Chinese dragons. I can't even pronounce the name of the beast. I'm like, what you talking about, boy?
And I just want to go back to drinking wine.
Okay.
It's like, who's Higurumugu?
I'm just looking for a new category. You know what? I'll let you guys even choose the category.
All right, Nordic.
Okay.
Never mind. Don't
I'm gonna give
that.
You. I'm going to give you... Yeah, I'll go real confusing on your ass with like weird names, and then you'll be like, "Damn, we shouldn't have chose Nordic, man." All right, I'm gonna give you some categories, and you guys choose. So, category one is myths and legends. Category two is nine worlds of Norse mythology.
Whoa. Oh, dang, bro!
That's my voice so far. We'll see.
And the other topic is Hindu deities. So if somebody really knows about Hindu deities, you could really take it home.
I knew like 5 months ago, but I'm...
So Ishuk, you choose because you're next.
Well, can we all choose? Can we?
You're really letting him choose this?
Yeah, because he's gonna choose.
I will choose nine worlds and I will...
He's going to get it. He knows them. I know them.
I mean,
all
if...
Nine?
Yeah.
I mean...
I played a lot of Nordic video
same.
Games. That's what he did too. Makes you
I mean,
them.
Are we going to take a vote? Are we going to... Can each of us have a different topic?
Just choose it, dude. Because if you miss
one... All right, nine worlds. Then.
Nine worlds.
If I don't get it, then I fucked up really bad, but...
You help me?
If you don't get it...
Yeah, you're going to win. You're probably going to get the question, right?
If you don't get it, you got a lot of explaining.
I know. Nordic is probably the one I know the most. It's not a lot, but it's probably the most.
I'm going to write down all the ones that he says in case he gets one wrong.
I can, like, maybe name all worlds. I shouldn't have said that shit.
We'll see.
The thing is, there's also the whole confusion with like sometimes the nine worlds sometimes differ in each version because there's some one of the planets' name or the world's names changes.
Okay.
But
are you ready?
Sure.
From which Norse mythological world do the Jotnar come from?
Jotunheim.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, I was going to say, fuck, did I fuck
it up?
You're
right, you got it.
Okay.
Hey, the winner!
Oh, my God. Right. That was, okay. That was
now we've got one last question.
First, everyone, dude, that's...
the first one I wrote on my hand, Jotunheim.
If you watch Thor 1, you know it. All right. I guess I'm going to sudden death? Or are we just all
right? Yeah, it's a sudden death. One question for both you and Sean to take it all the way home.
Okay. Well, whoever wins, right?
Yeah, whoever gets that question wins. It's final Jeopardy. Because Sean won the first contest, you won this one.
Okay.
So, let me pull up a question here.
Let me pull up real quick. What?
What? What did you say?
I said,
no, what you
said. I said, let me pull up real quick, boy.
Okay.
I'd be tight if you can get like first class tickets to Jotunheim.
What?
Yeah.
Don't we pretty much live in Jotunheim?
I don't know.
We pretty much live in the land of ice and giants.
Yeah, that'd be tight. Make friends with them. Like,
that's where Loki's from.
I want to go to Valhalla.
Yeah, Valhalla
except,
would be tight.
Except you can only stay there so long before the last big battle.
Yeah, the only way to get there is off a cliff.
No, the giant battle. Oh,
yeah,
battle,
or
right?
There too. But you have to have your axe in your hand to go to Valhalla.
All right.
There's
so this
of
is.
To go
I don't know if this would be considered mythology, but we've kind of haven't talked much about Roman gods.
Why are you looking at me? I ain't answering nothing.
No, I'm just saying that's,
that's kind of an easy and it doesn't really feel mythological. It's more of like I guess it is, but
maybe
you know.
Legend.
Let's see.
Are you choosing a different category?
Yeah.
Well, I'm still confused. So is this question for me and Sean?
It's for both of you guys.
Yeah. Okay.
So
right.
You go first, and if you don't get it, I can try it, and then we try another question.
All right.
All right.
And I make jokes in between.
That's right.
All right. So the topic is, can you name the nine Greek muses?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, I can name some of them, but not all of them.
Whammy. Okay.
How about let's do if you can.
You
can
asked
you
this
name...
question before.
No, I didn't.
I know I've heard this before,
really?
Very recently, and I think it was from you.
I didn't. I don't even know there
nine
were Greek muses.
Bro, that was in
no,
school.
Let's do if you can name three.
I don't even remember.
You can name three.
I don't think I can name three.
Oh, dang.
Three, nine muses.
I've seen the list a lot, but I don't. No, I never memorized it.
Nine muses.
I'm just like I've been waiting for this moment my whole life.
Should I choose an easier question?
I mean, can we?
I mean, I know Urania and I know Calliope. And there's also one of like history and tragic.
Tragedy.
You got two.
Right? Urania, Calliope.
I have like a guess on one, but I don't know.
I'm drawing blanks, bro.
Yeah.
What is it? Maybe we could just like. You know, leave it to tie.
I mean, I was thinking. I mean, it's not one of them, but I know there's one that starts with a D. I think that's like someone associated with like, I think some sort of happiness, but I might be completely wrong here.
Let's see.
Is it some Dionysus shit? I think I don't even know.
Oh shit! Oh, okay.
Where did I hear the muse thing?
No, there is no D.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess
but, I X'd out of it already. So let me give you guys a better question. I thought that was more of common knowledge.
No.
Again, I don't know anything about this stuff. So Egyptian gods, real or fake? This is going to be good.
What do you mean real or fake?
So determine if it's true or false. Is it a Greek god or not? So is it a...
Wait, is it an Egyptian god or not? Or what?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Is it? I'm gonna say the name.
Okay.
Or Egyptian god of what?
Okay.
Is this is his name, and you're gonna guess?
Okay. So
yeah.
Thumbs up or thumbs down?
Yeah.
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 Oh, so
should we just hide our bodies then? Like
you go first again.
Okay. Are we gonna?
So
okay.
We could do a best two out of three.
Okay. All right.
Let's do that.
Bing bong.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay. It's sudden death, I suppose.
Right.
He's like, I want to drink my wine. Hurry up.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay. Well, this quiz gives me no answers. Just a bunch of question marks. So we're going to find...
I guess... All right.
All right. Try it.
No, there's really no answers. I don't know.
Can't tell you
but
if
they,
right
but they give you the names?
They do. I guess we could look it up.
We know the name.
Maybe we can look it up, I suppose,
yeah,
right?
Okay, yeah. I'm right. back to it now. Sorry. Yeah. Can you name the real... okay.
Rick Ryer didn't help me.
Egyptian gods, real or fake? Sounds like some clickbait stuff. Okay. All right.
Oh, Egyptian.
So this is the mother goddess of joy, Hathor, real or fake?
Like, is it Egyptian or not?
It is Egyptian, but is it real or is it a real god or not?
Hathor? I thought it was Greek, but Hathor should be real. Yeah.
Hathor is a real god?
I mean, I was thinking Isis at first, but Hathor, I'm pretty sure. Unless I'm confusing with another deity that says H-A-T-H. Yeah,
Hathor is an Egyptian goddess.
I'm saying
Hathor is a real Egyptian goddess.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So
if Sean gets this wrong, you win.
Okay.
This next one. Okay. The god of numbers, Khufu, is a real god or not?
I believe so.
Are these even... See, I don't know if these are real or not. Khufu is a real god.
Can it be the god with a different attribute? Let's say if it was Khufu, the god of the sun, that's wrong. But it's still Khufu's real. But is that a question like that, or is it just...
I think it's are they real or not.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so Ashik. Father god of the young, Menes.
Menes, father, what was it? Father god of the young?
Father god of the young.
No, that's not real. That's fake, I think. Is it real?
It is real.
Fuck! Oh, shit. I've never heard of that.
Me either.
Menes, okay. Father god of the young?
At first I thought he said, Father god of the young, Menes.
Okay. So, did you get that wrong?
I said it was fake. So
okay,
I got it wrong.
So if Sean gets this right,
then he wins, and if he gets it wrong, we continue. Yeah.
Protection goddess Bast, real or fake?
Can spell that?
Bast.
Yes.
Real?
Damn it! That's real.
Is it?
It's real.
I think so.
It's the cat goddess too. Yeah, Bast. Or is it? Yeah, Bast.
Well, these are all real. What the heck? I guess we're going to run into one. So Sean wins.
Yeah, Sean wins.
All right. Congratulations.
Menes? Who's Menes?
M-E-N-E-S.
I don't know. My phone's about to die.
Everybody knew that.
Menes. God. Rick Riordan, you failed me. Men. A lot of these names sound Egyptian, but I guess the whole Egypt. Greek.
There are so many Egyptian gods and goddesses.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Many. I spelled it wrong.
Menes.
You could fill an ark with them.
What a menace.
Wow. Thanks for that pun.
Wait. There's Menes who's a pharaoh. I guess the pharaoh was deified, I suppose.
Are they all?
Yeah.
They're deified.
Technicality. Right.
Like Roman emperors, they're all deified.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. All right. I will look more on this.
Father god of the young.
There you go.
I didn't see father god of the young when I looked up Menes.
Yeah, I mean, there's a pharaoh. Is you know what? Let's you know. Let's
look up father god of the young.
Yeah.
Maybe we could bring this back on its
maybe because Egyptian god. Oh, it's god of the young, right?
Yeah. Father god of the young.
I mean, it's a historical figure.
Sounds like an Iron Maiden song.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, the only thing that came out was Horus, Adam, and Khons. I mean, Menes is an Egyptian pharaoh, but is he...
See, that was just a bad quiz because it didn't give me the answers.
Yeah.
Well, you could look him up.
Well, that's the problem.
Yeah,
I did, but it didn't
say if it was a god or not, but oh well.
Yeah. I mean, it's whatever.
Technical.
Fact check.
I suppose
you need to get a fact check bell. So every time we got a fact check, we go bing.
Oh wait! I think I found it. No, same guy. It says
same guy.
Isn't there some guy back in the booth with all his books and you just look it up?
Yeah,
we'll send this to our historian in the back.
The only thing that makes sense that he might be a god of the young is
He died young.
Well, I don't know about that, but it says that he inherited the throne from the god Horus. So I'm not sure. If, well, it's all of them are like that.
Oh, all right. Anyway.
Whatever.
All right. Any final thoughts before we go into our final poem?
Oh, all right. You go first.
I don't have any final thoughts except now I know about Zhang Liu, Chinese multiple-headed dragon.
I already forgot.
And he was slain by Yu the Great.
Who? Great. Yu.
Soulja Boy's entire song was actually about
Yu. Do you forget?
Great.
It was Yu.
Yeah. Yu the Great. Final thoughts. I kind of said my final thoughts in the last Mythology episode. Fuck Menny's. I really like my chicken wings. And
fuck, did you say fuck Menny's?
Yeah.
I don't know. Menny's father.
Oh, and also,
be careful.
We need to look more into Eastern Asian mythology. I think we're all lacking on that.
I think the Chinese, I mean, I'm biased
because
I study Chinese stuff, but I like the Chinese stuff.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
Yeah, look up the myth of Panku.
Panku?
Okay. Panku, yeah.
Panku.
Yeah.
Isn't that what they bread, like, shrimp with?
I don't know.
Panko?
Probably.
What a come down for the goddess.
Yeah.
I don't know. I had fun.
Sean's got jokes today, that's for sure.
Yeah. The quiz was fun.
Okay.
How about you, Zach? Any last thoughts?
That was my final
thought. Oh, yeah. I agree. Quiz is always fun.
Yeah. I just like hanging out. I caught the podcast. That's what I'm stoked about.
Well, we're happy you did.
Yeah.
All right.
What about you, Sean?
Well, my last thoughts are actually pretty simple. Mythology has always been with us since man developed some sense of asking or enough intelligence to ask or enough leisure to ask why are we here? Where are we going? Are there any rulers over us? And I believe that those basic thoughts are still with us today. So mythology is an ongoing thing in our even though we don't always recognize that, I believe it's with us still today as much as it was 30, 40, 50,000 years ago, maybe 100,000 years ago. I think it's still with us today. So, final poem. I think this is the first time I've ever done this, but I'm going to read one of my own poems.
All right.
And I'm going to preface it with a quote from The Greek Myths, Volume 1 by Robert Graves. It was first published in 1955. It's about the god Pan, the Greek god Pan. Pan is the only god who has died in our time. The news of his death came to one Thamus, a sailor in a ship bound for Italy by way of the island Paxi. A divine voice shouted across the sea, "Thamus, are you there? When you reach Pelotes, take care to proclaim that the great god Pan is dead," which Thamus did. And the news was greeted from the shore with groans and laments. The Egyptian Thamus apparently misheard the ceremonial lament, "Thamus Pan Magas Tethmaka," the all-great Thamus is dead, for the message, "Thamus, great Pan is dead." At any rate, Plutarch, a priest at Delphi in the later half of the 1st century AD, believed and published it. Yet, when Pausanias made his tour of Greece about a century later, he found Pan's shrines, altars, sacred caves, and sacred mountains still much frequented. And that leads us to my poem, which I titled simply Pan. He spreads no panic now, slouched by the roadside, his pipes dropped in weary gloom beside him, its wind shafts cracked and reeds shredded. Picking at matted and tangled hair, his ears flicking with fleas, his hooves dusty with dung, his horns circled by bravely buzzing flies, his haunches raw and itchy with scrabby mange. The god noticing nothing, his pastures plowed, his flocks long since fled, his forest felled, his streams all dammed and made rancid, and him, once the lord of all wanting only out, throwing out a hoof, begging someone to stop, pleading with all, unheeded by all, as progress continues progressing. The travelers turning only a curious glance, one child crying at the ungodly sight, the sight soon out of sight and forgotten. of a god still living, not dead as reported. The ancient sailor hearing the report wrong, the wind distorting the cry from the leafy shore. But if not then now, slowly dying, the immortal, once mirthful spirit decaying. By nightfall, gone, the eyesore to travelers departed, having limped away to nearby barren mountains, away to some webbed and watery cave, amongst the places once feared by some, places that once served as havens for others, but now a place serving no purpose, but only to hide a harried god for now. Until the report of time proves right, and progress passes in headlong hurry into oblivion, and the sun and seasons cycle again, promising Pan's return, rejuvenating all in joy to noising flute and tabor and jangling tambourine, obliging all the woods to dance and rocks rejoice in song in the now of time-defying mythic power, the visions created in every beast of blood, if one knows only where to look, and one knows how to see.